Welcome back, Dog Nation. We are looking back on what was another spectacular season and huge bowl win for the Kirby and Company coached Georgia Bulldogs in the year of 2023. It is now 2024. The national championship is a few days away, and there are no SEC teams preparing to play this year. You guys, you already know what it is. Get ready for another hitter. This is Dogs Off the Leash. Well, Cheeto, we said potentially we were joking, but funny or not, we were talking about a 50-0 prediction prior to the game, prior to this huge bowl win versus Florida State. Ended up being 63-3. You know it's bad when the opposing coach is apologizing and talking about things after the game. Tears were shed in the Florida State locker room. They had a great season. They had a really good team. I think this game would have been much closer. When you get beat 63-3, it doesn't really give you a great argument for how much closer it could have been. But I do think it would have been a much higher competitive game. They had a lot of NFL talent go. I do think this bowl season needs to change. But what are your immediate thoughts to just a complete drubbing? I mean, literally to you, I challenged you, Cheeto. I said, last year we beat TCU 65-7. Are we more motivated? Is the mismatch greater? Like, those are real questions we talked about. Where are you at with that now, man? Please return to the prior episode.
Yeah, you were a lot closer on your prediction than I was. I was on here talking about that Kirby was going to take it easy on this team, maybe kind of throttle it down. And the funny part is, I think we kind of did. I think we kind of did take it easy on them.
I don't think you were wrong on that. I think they were
to be our own record of points scored in a bowl game. This is 60 points against a blue blood team in Florida State. Now, we know about all the players that opted out, but this is, I think that also shows the depth and the talent of our program. Our twos and threes are ready for their next chapter, like today. I mean, that is crazy. 673 total yards, 300 passing yards, 372 rushing yards, and a lot of stars of the future that we have to talk about. But before we get there, in all honesty, I do hate it for Florida State. And I said this from the jump, but we talked about how it was a real possibility that they weren't going to get in given their situation, ACC, which they're going to start probably trying to make moves to get out of because of seasons like this. They're starting quarterback out. And then all these other people following suit. But in all honesty, college football should be embarrassed. They should be embarrassed with a result like this. Like, yes, Georgia is a very talented team. And a lot of people on a lot of different podcasts that represent Dog Nation are really upset that Kirby didn't fight more to get into the CFP, that our SEC commissioner didn't fight more for that. We had our opportunity, though, guys. Like, let's keep it a bean. We had our opportunity against Alabama. We lost. The same Alabama team that we thought was suspect all year long that ended up losing to Michigan on the last play. We lost to them. Were we banged up? Yes. But that was our opportunity. Were we still one of the best four teams? I think everybody can agree that we were. But again, that's not what we agreed on, how the system was going to go. You know that they were going to go to conference championships and blah, 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 whatever. So we were out. And we took our frustrations out on Florida State. And I hate that for them. This game really didn't mean nothing, but from an organizational standpoint, I think you can tell Kirby has this program running in one way, and not just to pick on Florida State. A lot of other programs may have felt the same way and done the same thing, because I think it's a good program, but there's leaps and bounds between where Georgia is right now and where Florida State was after the Orange Bowl. I think that's very apparent.
Very apparent, and it goes to show as a case study for why you may not want to build your program on transfers, at least especially within the way the transfer windows are structured. I mean, Max, the Orange Bowl people, I wonder how much money was actually lost, because you got to think, like, Okay, for instance, you got to probably be able to equate it. What would the eyeballs have been on the game, at least in the second half, had the game been closer? Game would be closer, definitely, if all these players didn't opt out. So there's got to be some way. I'm not necessarily that great at math to begin with, but I'm sure you could parse apart a math equation that would equate how much money is actually being lost having the games this way. Like, that's got to affect the Orange Bowl people, the sponsors. I mean, the reason we do bowl season like we do is because at the end of the day, they're trying to make their dollars. So at some point, I guarantee you this shit will change because of that alone, because you can only take big money from big companies so long. And that's just the thing on that. And I do like what Kirby has done overall. Like, I'm with you. I understand why people are griping, but I think people are griping because they're comparing it to what other coaches are known to do. Here's my thing, though. Kirby already came out and said, hey, all of America, it is pretty clear to me, with as objective as I can be, that Georgia is one of the best four teams. If you don't think that, you probably just, you know, fill in the blank, aren't doing your job, don't know what you're talking about.
You're
whatever.
Just looking for the number beside the team's name. You're not actually watching these games and looking at the product from week one to now. Come on now. Come on.
Exactly. Now. So Kirby came out and he's made that statement. That's all you really need to say. Anything he's going to say after that is just a reiteration of that. And what has Kirby been doing? He's not only on the recruiting trail, getting all these, you know, good transfer guys coming in. He's re-recruiting his own players. He's doing all these different things. He's putting his energy to where he can actually affect change. And at the end of the day, that is just like a brilliant thing for all of us to do. I mean, you take your licks and then you learn. Like, you can say what you want to say. This is America. Like, say what you need to say, but move on after that. Like, don't be like one of these coaches, a la like Ryan Day or all these other. We see it, like, they go on a campaign, like Nick Saban, he's still talking about a center that dropped the ball and all this. Like, he'll be talking about that 6 years from now. Hey, man, if we just didn't have those snaps, like, that is just how football is. But you got to, at first, like, do what Jocko says. And Jocko's, like, the forever good leader. And, you know, point the blame on yourself. And it's really interesting, dude. I know I talked to you about this before the podcast, but I'm reading these books right now, and they're about, like, organizational success. Is a whole research breakdown of like really great elite companies. You know, you're either elite or you're not. And then just the good ones. And like, even though it's a business breakdown, it's like hardcore research on the trends that tie the great together compared to the good. And one of the biggest things is like the guy who led it. The book is called Good to Great, by the way. And this, his follow-up is called Built to Last. Hey, what are we trying to do? We're trying to build something to last. You know, Kirby even said on a press conference, like, hey, we're not going anywhere. So I think this applies to him. I wouldn't be surprised if he read these books, because to me, what, you know, the guy who led this research initially wanted to say, hey, look, I'm looking at all these good companies. I know business enough to know they all got good leaders. Like, obviously, we're going to find out that leaders aren't that important. But the more his research team dug into this, they actually pushed back, had a lot of conflict, and eventually the data could not lie. What it said is that, yes, every good, you know, organization, company, they got good leaders. Ohio State, Ryan Day is not a bad coach. Like, we all know that. You know, we know that there is a difference, though, between, you know, like a Ryan Day and a Kirby Smart, or even like a Jim Harbaugh. Like, you can compare those two. But the thing is that in this book, they identified the difference between good to great is that these leaders, you know, they don't make excuses. They're self-effacing. If anything, they take the blame. And they're the difference between the organizations that were great. They had leaders that weren't just highly competent, you know, good recruiters, good coaches, whatever. They also had a certain characteristic and a value system that said, hey, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses. So, like, we have an elite coach, and there's so many things in this book that tie into football and tie into why Georgia has been so well, done so well. And just like another like major thing that they were talking about is that, you know, to go from good to great, you got to face the hard facts. When Kirby came in, he faced the hard facts. You know, he said that we didn't have the depth. We had things to work on. We had to bring in the facilities. Well, we've truly watched, you know, Kirby go from good to great in this run. And, you know, we're at the end of a season where we're 13-1, and right? 13-1.
Yeah,
right?
13-1. Great.
13-1.
Hell of a season. I mean,
hell of a season. Like, and people, and I understand there's always going to be fans that are in any fan base that are going to say, hey, it wasn't enough.
Oh, they're out there. They're out there.
I wanted a three-peat, but we didn't earn it on the field overall. Like,
and that's why we didn't talk about that too early, because that's a hard thing to do. Some of you fans got to get right with that. But yeah, continue, please.
Yeah, so like, we look at these other like really, really good teams. Like Tennessee, they had their year. Oh man, it was the weather, it was the rain. Like, you know, like Ohio State. Oh man, like, you know, if one player didn't get hurt, like these things do happen. I'm not saying they're not, like, they don't have their points. You can make that case, but to go on and on and on. And that's the thing, is that Kirby has just instilled it in the culture. We got all these guys coming back and things going great. And then something that is, you know, we're going to get into like 2024 and all that, but I'll just, to tie it all together, y'all should check out the book. It's pretty interesting. But the thing in the follow-up book of Built to Last is that, you know, we started the season saying what? Kirby came in saying, hey, better never rest. He took a great psychological nugget from a highly successful organization in Australia of all places, in a totally different sport, to instill championship mettle in his team. And in this chapter 9 of this book, one of the biggest chapters of organizations that are truly built to last is good enough never is. And that's basically the same thing. And that whole book really ties down to just the competitive drive to, you know, not rest on your laurels. Kirby hasn't done that. And coming into this season, to put a bow on my little, you know, comparative analysis of this book or whatever, is that we talked about, this is the NIL era, this is the transfer era. There are some things we're going to have to ride a wave to continue to be successful, because there's going to be great, great changes. Well, this whole Built to Last book is about making the pivot, seeing the changes, facing the hard facts, you know, taking blame, taking accountability. I feel like we've done an amazing thing building this Georgia program up. You compare it to Florida State, that thing is, you know, built on the sand. This thing is built on the rock. So we've done a really good job with all of that. And we are in a position to pivot. We're adapting to this new era. And damn, it feels good to be a dog. So I'm proud of the season, proud of our guys. And I just feel like, you know, hats off to a great season. We can talk all about all of that.
And with Kirby, the one thing, because coach, we always talk about coach speak during these interviews, right? Everybody wants to say, keep the main thing the main thing. Everybody wants to say, control the controllables. The thing about Kirby is that you see him being active and actually doing this. When he says there's no I in team and it's us and it's we and it's me, he does it, to not just to do it at the highest level. And those are the things, those are the characteristics and the quality of a successful leader that has permeated through this program. As fans, at least I try to do that. Like when I'm talking to, you know, the psycho fans on the internet, just like, Kirby doesn't give out this energy. Why do you, it's like, essentially you want to be an Alabama fan, but in red and black, like, don't have, like, see it the way the coach sees it. The players see it that way. It's about kind of investing in this program and not just worried about NIL dollars and worry about yourself. That's the energy Kirby gives off. I really wish as a fan base that we would do the same thing, because those are the building blocks to success. So, I love that little spiel about the book and how it kind of mirrors the same thing. I think we can see it in a lot of different organizations and a lot of different programs. But
the thing about Kirby, I will just say, sorry to like cut you off, but the thing about Kirby, I'll just say, is that when, if you could just hand Kirby the trophy, you know, I think there truly are some coaches that if the Illuminati could come to him like, yo, bro, I got you a national championship, like, what's up? I feel like there are some coaches that would just take that trophy, truly.
Yeah, because, don't kid yourself.
You know,
there's plenty of people who would.
Yeah, smart, talented coaches, but they're really in it for the glory. I think Kirby really is in it for the dirt floor. He loves the dirt floor, man.
That grind, man.
Like, he loves the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
Every little detail of the process. He loves it. When
he does.
Georgia loses, he might be disappointed, but man, he's excited to coach. So, I mean,
think about the Alabama championship where we lost that walk off, 2nd-26 and 17. That was 17, right?
18 is what they won. The 17.
That year. Okay. That year. Yeah. Yeah. That next calendar year. I mean, you saw that look in his eyes. You saw the hurt in his voice. And what does Georgia do really since then? Just on a tear, just on an absolute tear. So I expect this loss to fuel this program, for him to pick apart what we didn't do well, to get on to Bobo, like, hey, in these situations, we got to have a little bit more creativity. You saw the portal. You see the players coming back and all the things. And speaking of the future, I wanted to talk about some of the bright spots in this game. I'll go ahead and start it off with my favorite, because I was talking about Gunnar Stockton getting in here and making some noise. And, ooh, as promised, as advertised, I'm so excited for Gunnar Stockton to be the QB1 of this team. He's got some things he's got to work on, but I think the thing that's the most exciting is when the play goes off script, right? You can be the best offensive coordinator. As a defensive coordinator, you can throw your best blitz at him, best coverage. Guess what? He's just going to make that backyard play. When he broke the pocket and threw that little jump pass to, I think it was Dejon Edwards, like, that's the type of, what's the word I'm looking for?
X factor.
Yeah, but kind of just, again, it's just like off script. Yeah, that kind of, yeah, whatever you want to call that. That kind of like that variable you can't really account for, like, right? It's just, that's kind of what you need sometimes. And I think he's going to give that to our team, especially with the influx of talent this year and next year that we're going to have. I'm beyond excited. As even though I'm excited for Carson Beck to come back and make noise, Gunnar Stockton is going to be that's going to be a fun season when he's QB1. I'm telling
almost connected to this. So I just had this thought, and tell me if this makes any sense. So, like, there are in basketball, there are great shooters, and there are shooters that are kind of like how you're describing Gunnar Stockton. Like, think of a guy like Kyle Korver at his peak. Let's just say you got Kyle Korver from that one game he went off, right? Amazing shooter. Just you passing the ball, he's right there for it. But Steph is kind of like, or a Trae Young, but let's go with Steph.
No, that's a great comparison.
He's got that like Patrick Mahomes ability.
Great comparison.
To kind of like, just he's got wiggle, you know, and he can catch
shooting threes is much different from shooting off the dribble. As a point guard, when you can shoot from anywhere, whatever you want, because the ball's in your hand, that's way different from Kyle Korver standing in the corner. Yes, exactly.
In any angle, too. It's not
way
like,
different.
Korver could do, like, just for the fact, he could shoot off the dribble, but he's just not, he doesn't have those weird, wacky.
He needs a down screen.
A couple, but not like Steph. Steph, Patrick Mahomes basketball. And yeah, like,
you got to run the pin down for Korver.
You see the next generations. You see like the Trae Youngs, and just look at like these random viral videos of dudes in like ninth grade shooting half court three, like just pulling up at half court like is normal now. Like, so anyway, back to football. That's the thing I like about Gunnar Stockton, is that he's got that kind of like pop ability, that flexibility, that just that like wiggle. And, you know, as great as Carson Beck is, I think if he just added a little bit of that, man, his game would go to the next level, because a lot of times he just looks flat-footed.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see that with dudes like in his body type. You know, Stetson was smaller. I like what you said about, you know, athleticism is kind of like this like vague term, but I would just say that Gunnar Stockton is way more like a running back. And when you got a running back essentially playing quarterback, man, that's hard to stop, because he was hurting his shoulder. He wasn't just running.
No, he's not scared. He's going to have to learn to get out of bounds, but he wasn't scared.
Yeah.
Finished the day with about 100 yards passing, 2 tutties. Again, mobile quarterback of the future. Absolutely cannot wait. I think rightfully so, but Kendall Milton was the MVP of the Orange Bowl. I wish him the best career in the NFL. I wish we could have solved this, Kendall, for, heck, not even 4 years. Give me two. Give me 2 years of that, 3 years of that. He would have been pushing
one full season, really.
One full season. I mean, but a beast. Absolute beast. But future bright spots, Roderick Robinson. Mm. Now, I was one of the few on social media. I was bellyaching a little bit when they were trying to bring in ETN, because we got 7 solid running backs coming in. And in the age of the transfer portal, you don't want to crowd up a room and then have people leave, kind of like we had with Justin Fields and Jake Fromm. Like, you want people to stay and wait, but it's got to make sense for them too, right? But what I'm hearing is that Branson Robinson's injury is a little bit more significant than we may have heard. So when you see a running back like Roderick Robinson go for 7 carries for 70 yards, that is beautiful. Bright spot. Him with ETN coming in next year, I fully expect Roderick Robinson to be the number 2 back, split carries, until Branson gets healthy. We all know he's a chub type of player. Looks like it, runs like it, could be a little better, could be a little worse. I think that's still great, whatever that is. So really looking for that. And on the wide receiver side, Dylan Bell. Dylan Bell is the wide receiver, I think, who's got a bright future as far as the non-transfers, right? Ra-Ra is going to be great. Dominic Lovett's going to be great. London Humphrey's going to come in and make a big impact. Colby Young from Miami, and brand new wide receiver that transferred in, Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson III from USC. I was really excited about that pickup. He's been at USC for about 3 years, contributed in a big way. Not anything crazy, but the depth of the wide receiver room now is elite. So Dylan Bell is what I'm looking for. And those are my bright spots from the Orange Bowl. And maybe I shout out to Anthony Evans in there too, in the return game, especially with Makai Muse gone. This kid's got good vision. It's just some people got it, some people don't. What's that one Bears player that used to return punts?
Evan Hester.
Hester. Some guys just got that. They see it, they hit that hole, and they are gone.
I mean,
he's not quite that, but he's got good vision.
Yeah, but even when Devin Hester came to Atlanta, there were people really saying, like, he's kind of like over the hill. He had like two returner of the year seasons.
That's what he does. Yeah. He's just a specialist, bro. You can always tell. Some people are talented, but some people just got that vision and they're dangerous. So I want to see a lot of him too. So some bright spots. Keegan, anything for you that kind of stood out from the game that you're looking forward to that we're going to get back next season?
Yeah, you touched on a good bit of it. I mean, the Gunner Stockton was obviously great just to see him ball out. You talked about Anthony Evans. Man, I just like the competitive drive. You know, to me, anytime you can put in backups and they execute and, you know, it's no funny business when you're up 40 points at the half, that's a good sign. So I liked what we were doing overall from the Orange Bowl. I'm trying to think. You know, you kind of mentioned Roderick Robinson. He had a great game. Just some like the dude is a beast. Like, he's 240. He reminds me of, like, I mean, you don't see guys built like him as often, as fast as he is. But I grew up, you know, having a TJ Duckett jersey, having a Jerome Bettis jersey. Like, big guys that could run the ball always had a soft spot for me. And he's not necessarily like a chunky guy or like a Mike Aslott or something like that. But dude is a hoss. Like, bringing him down is something else. So I overall like where this program is trending. And it's nice to see all the young guys. I know they weren't in the game, but it's kind of like a highlight for me. We saw some of them on the sidelines. We've seen some pictures on social media, what have you. But dudes are already repping their Georgia gear, getting ready for this next season. But when you beat a team that was about to claim a national title, 63-3, I don't care how many guys they had out. It's just a nice, nice feeling for Georgia. So overall, I put it as a cherry on top. And, you know, the second half, I kind of glazed over it and just kind of watched it like back. It was like a spring game at that point. I'm going to be honest, y'all.
No,
it was
100%.
Like, it was like a spring
game. We was chilling. Lewis chilling, chopping it up.
Another
touchdown?
There was a Georgia player that had like a halftime selfie that he posted.
That was Brinson.
He went live.
I think it might have been Brinson.
doing those like meme faces, like the
Neil. I mean, it was crazy. And again, it's not always fun to win that way, but you take it when you get it. And speaking of that senior class that just finished, I believe they're the most winning program outside of maybe that COVID year. I don't know how they do that, but like 50 wins, I think, is the most winning class in UGA history. And that's with the two national titles and the one SEC title. So that is huge. And some of the highlighted names, this isn't everybody, but some of the highlighted names of people who have declared to the NFL at this point, Kamari Lassiter, who's looking at a first round, maybe early second round grade, depending on how it goes. You know, it's more team needs than really just pure talent. Javon Bullard, he was a bubble guy. A lot of people thought he was going to come back. He's going to take his chance. I don't blame him, really. SVPG, Cedric Van Pram. I mean, he's become a staple of this UGA program during his time here. I think he's the first center to come off the board. He has been the glue of this offensive line. I know the center position is naturally that, but he leaned into that leadership. He was one of the ones that Kirby was not scared of at all to do that. Then obviously Ladd McConkey, Brock Bowers, Tyke Smith. Brock was a tough loss, but also Logue and Walters. So those are some of the names that have left to go to the NFL. Keeg, I'll let you hop in. And then we got to talk about the Mount Rushmore, because I think a lot of people's Mount Rushmore may have just changed after the career that Brock Bowers just had.
Yeah, that's yeah, very true. That's a hyper talented squad, and I would just say if anybody could just learn from the Philadelphia Eagles and draft more Bulldogs, I'm not gonna sit here and break down each single draft grade. I'm sure maybe like one of our guys is little, there's bound to be one person overrated, but most of these guys are getting slept on. That has been a trend for the draft. So I'll just say that. And the one thing I say, I just wanted to add, man, I heard this is, oh my God.
Honestly, if you're about to say draft Falcons need to draft him,
No,
I don't
no,
want
no,
him to
no,
go to the
no, no,
Falcons.
no.
I'm
I'm
so
not gonna,
tired of
I'm
the
not,
I'm
I'm,
sorry, Falcons fans, but this franchise has been so poorly run the past few years, man. I wouldn't wish that on none of my guys, but
no, when you were
I'll
talking
let
about,
you.
when you're talking about SVP, I was just saying the rumor mill said that he turned down a huge NIL deal to go to Alabama and be their center for another year.
Oh my goodness.
I'm
Listen
just
to you.
sorry. I'm sorry.
Listen to you, listen to you. But let's hop into this Mount Rushmore, because we're gonna have a few things. We gotta talk about returning players and kind of what we're looking forward to 2024. As like the season's done, it's gonna start rounding the four. But I don't know if you had a mo I gave it to you pre-production, right? What is your Mount Rushmore? Has it changed after Brock Bowers, or are you the same? Or let me start. You know what? Let me start and I'll let you feed off of that. So all right. So I'm early 30s, right? So for some people, you know, people want to go back all the way to Frank Sinkwich and do all this other stuff. You can pick whatever era you want, but here's what I got, right? And it's a mixture of your individual accomplishments and then also what you've done for the team, right? What you did while you were here, or how crucial you were to an era, yada 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 yada, right? So first things first, Herschel Walker's number one on there, on mine. That is what it is. Herschel Walker is not only the greatest UGA player, in my opinion, but one of the greatest players in college football history. The usage, the highlights, the championships, the SEC, what he means to college football is a whole thing. And there's a little bit of lore and glory and legend on that. I recognize that, but the fact remains, Herschel Walker is on there. On mine, I've also got Champ Bailey, one of the best players to ever walk through UGA's doors. Maybe not so much of the team success at that time, but individually, the measurables, NFL success, just the type of player he was. So he's on mine. Champ Bailey is always one of those names. I went with David Pollack. David Pollack was a menace at UGA defensively, and just all the accolades he had there. He didn't have an NFL career due to the neck injury. And then obviously, Brock Bowers is number four on mine. The freshman of the year in the SEC. Two titles, a big part of those two titles. Mackey Award should have won all 3 years back to back. I mean, almost set all these wide receiver type records here at UGA for like yards and touchdowns or whatever it was. So like he's on mine. I wanted to take a second to think on that, but that's mine. Honorable mention to TG3 and Stetson Bennett, but that's my four right now off the dome. Keegan, what do you got? You got a new Mount Rushmore? Or are you staying the same?
Man, I don't. So I don't. For one, the problem with Mount Rushmore is that there's only four guys, right? So
That's the point. That's the
that
point,
is
though.
the problem. I will go ahead and say that I think that ahead of Algie Crumpler, or not Algie Crumpler, that's the Falcons. I'm tripping. Leonard Pope from Georgia and Ben Watson. I would say that
Bro,
obviously,
it's not even close.
Brock Bowers has easily pass and become the number one tight end ever, right? That's a given. So I would like to just say first, I think that we should judge football teams by position, and if we're gonna make Mount anything, it should just be like the GOAT team. Like, what's your all Georgia team ever? I like that better as a way to honor these guys. But that said, since we're doing four, I got Herschel one. I got Bowers. I think Bowers cracks the top four, okay, and then I like Champ Bailey as at two, and also I kind of have to judge a little bit of this. Like, to me, just me personally, I know this isn't how we do it. Like, everyone at large, generally speaking, we all think of it as your Georgia Mount Rushmore is Georgia and just what they did there. But like, anytime, like, I immediately thought of Terrell Davis, who's not going to be on my Mount Rushmore, but he was a Super Bowl MVP. And a damn good dog, and one of the greatest ever, right? And like, I started thinking about like overall legacies, period, even just like beyond football. Even like what Hines Ward did is pretty
Yeah, I
big.
mean, you can. Like, that's like Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker didn't have an outstanding NFL career. He was in the what? The USFL or whatever Donald Trump was doing back then. So he didn't have a prolific professional career.
You know, but he was dominant when he was a professional. And I think had he just gone to the NFL and that whole like more so financial kerfuffle hadn't really taken place, because he was an NFL level guy. I mean, you can't say it wasn't.
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
like, I think he would have been. I think that's a shame that that's how we even judge it. And here's a hot take for you. We've been seeing The Rock make the rounds. How long is it going to be to the US, the XFL, the USFL, those two just made a merger, right? When is it going to be that like a super league like that can compete with the NFL? Like, I don't think we're that far off from it. Maybe in the 10, 20 years. That's just like a little
I
bold
mean, it
prediction.
just depends. I mean, the Canada's football league's been around for a minute. They're not really competing. Their league, all respect to them, but like, it's not the same.
I just think that's like just a money thing. It's
It
it,
is. And, the, and
it
these people
is.
at the top ain't giving away no money to no XFL or to no Rock, or they're not doing it. But
Not anytime soon yet,
not
but
no time soon, bro.
I think that could be a thing. I mean, we see it in soccer. We see it in other sports for
No,
sure.
for sure. And like that, and that's all good. But as far as the pros, as far, okay, so in
Mount
relation to
Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore,
Okay, I
I
got
just like
Herschel.
Matthew Stafford would be up there just because of where he went in the NFL. You can't really take all of that into consideration, but like Champ Bailey was really good in the NFL.
Like we could do a whole podcast just on DGDs and rating them out for different things, like best, you know, pro career, best just straight Georgia career, best senior year. Because to me, honestly, too, like, and back in Campus Legend, you could really like build your legend up if you came back for your senior year. So that is like to me a factor. That's why I really, to me, like my personal Mount Rushmore, I got to put David Pollack on there, right? Because the dude was just like legend among legend. His NFL career got cut short, broken neck, what have you. But I think David Pollack's on my Mount
So
Rushmore.
ours is the same then.
Okay. Is it? So
Yeah.
you said Pollack. Okay. Well, then shit. Okay. We got
And
Sam.
that's okay. Some people's are going to be that way, but not. But I think that's super solid. Like I said, honorable mention to TG3 is my favorite running back, but I can't put him over Herschel. I can't do that. Ain't
Let's
no
see.
way.
What about like Fran Tarkenton? Did he not win? Like, was it him or Cinquich that won a
Cinquich,
Heisman?
I think you can do that, but then that's the same argument like Babe Ruth. Yeah, Babe Ruth was playing against people, plumbers. Part-time plumbers and stuff. Like, so I mean, you can do that if you want to, and no disrespect, but like compared to today, that's why it's hard to do it across eras. So I give mine, and all respect to people who want to give theirs, but that's just me. That's just me. Different times, bro. Let's be honest.
For sure. For sure. And there's been so many other like just excellent NFL guys that dwarf their college careers and almost make you forget they were just like pretty good in college.
For
Like,
sure. And some people don't really blossom until they get to the pros. So that's.
yeah. So it's like the NFL can definitely kind of, depending on how you look at it, can just kind of shade
So
legacy.
that was just for the sake of argument. But let's hop into some of the returning players, because that's what we're hearing right now all over social media. I believe Nazir Stackhouse is coming back using his COVID eligibility year, all SEC. Tate Ratledge, second team All American. That is huge for the offensive line coming back. And then somebody else actually just committed to coming back, Xavier Truss. Now, Keegan, you were a little bit more enthusiastic about Truss than I was, and only because for me, I think some people are just born big, truthfully. I haven't really seen the bend required or the feet required to be a primetime offensive lineman, and I think right now he's probably just going to be clogging up the pipe as far as development of some of the other guys. I mean, no disrespect. This guy's been in the program for a long time. He's still one of the biggest people on the roster. He struggles. He struggles. He's out over his feet. He's reaching elite edges, toast him every single time. He's great for depth, but that is what it is. And speaking of the offensive line, 2004, it looks like Green's coming back to hold down a tackle spot. Monroe Freeling is going to be one of those next tackles. Micah Morris, Dylan Fairchild, they've been waiting their turn. And people from where they're from know these guys are going to be monsters. And it sounds like Jared Wilson's probably going to get first crack at the center. So, good to see some people returning. I don't know your feelings on it, but I wanted to get that from you, Keegan, real quick. We got about 4 minutes before we wrap up.
Yeah, so to me, anytime you can have guys come back in the program, that's great for continuity, especially dudes that have been contributing at a pretty high level. I'll hear you on Xavier Truss, but I'm hoping that, you know, dudes can take a next step. Hopefully he does that. works on his footwork, maybe loses some weight. I mean, sometimes that's all it is for some of these linemen. I know Kirby's talking about that with the young guys coming in. So look for that. Maybe he'll make a jump. But dude, great, great foundational pieces, great news with all that. And then, you know, the transfers that we've been bringing in quite a few guys. I'm excited about just this wide receiver core. Certain positions, you're not going to want them to transfer in and out, right? And
Facts.
the line is one of those for the most part. Granted, if you have a need, right, you do whatever you can for that need, but ideally you develop, okay? And like wide receiver is not, you know, one of those positions that is kind of like a transfer position, and Georgia's kind of hopped into that modern model. We're pivoting, we're built to last, we're doing what we need to do there. So what are your thoughts just on who we've gotten in the transfer portal? We also got Xavier McLeod, Mr. Football out of South Carolina, defensive tackle, but just the wide receivers we've picked up. Any first thoughts, takes on that? Just how do you think we're doing in this offseason transfer wise?
Yeah, I think it's a good collection of talent that we needed at certain spots. We said going into the pre-offseason, right? We needed defensive line, we needed wide receivers, especially after losing Ladd, especially with Brock gone, who's pretty much been an elite wide receiver in our offense. We needed that. So that's been great. But more importantly, like you said, I think it's also about re-recruiting and keeping players. The transfer portal is closed as of last night, opens again in April. But there was a lot of talk of Julian Humphrey, aka TikTok boy, right? He hopped into the portal for a little bit, came back. I don't know if it was I think he had a realization. I think he got offered some money and then had a realization like, nah, there's really no point. Georgia's where it's at. I'll get money, I'll get developed, I'm gone. Daniel Harris was in the portal. Another cornerback that showed a lot of promise. I think he's coming back, and that is a great piece. So really right now, Daniel Humphrey, Dalen Everett, those guys need to be battling out for position, because I'm telling you right now, KJ Bolden's coming in here. Ellis Robinson's coming in here. Jonelle Aguero, these guys are coming in here. So it's tough, but I'm glad that they're staying. And then other than that, Keegan, I wanted to give a hot take. I really don't think it's a hot take, really, given what we have coming back. I was going to say originally UGA was going to be a top three team. I think UGA might start the season next year number one. I really do. With what Alabama's losing, what Michigan will lose, Washington, they're not going to put it number one. I think UGA is going to go into 2024 number one. That doesn't mean we're going to win a championship, but that starts us off on the right foot and gives us a lot of potential to maintain that going in and staying in that 12 and going for another championship. So I thought it was a hot take, didn't turn out to be.
Well, and that just speaks to why, how important it is, not just for our eyeballs, but for the momentum of the team, having that huge win, 63-3. I mean, that's an argument in itself to be number one. So we're doing everything we need to do to trend. Alabama slipped up against Michigan. You know, Nick Saban's out here blaming centers. We don't know where Jim Harbaugh is going to be. We'll talk about it as things go on, but it's all looking good for Georgia the next season.
Love it. Love it. We got the national championship coming on Monday. Michigan versus Washington. Looking like a good matchup. We will see. And guys, we'll get back with you before, probably after that, but before the Super Bowl. So hang tight. As always, guys, we appreciate you. Catch us wherever you hear your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Keegan, I appreciate you. And as always, guys, you know what it is.
Of the leash.
Off the leash.
I do it for the dogs.